Hello and welcome. This is episode 27 of the 2QB XP experience. This is what we're calling the Colin Kaepernick experience. And I am clearly not Greg Smith, who usually does the introduction. I'm Joshua Lake on Twitter, at Lake2QBs. And Greg Smith, the normal voice introing you in, is here on the line with me today. We're kind of swapping roles, keep you on your toes. Greg, how's it going?
Things are generally going okay. I am, like, my home league has me on home league tilt, like, at an all-time high. Otherwise, things are fine. I know no one wants to hear about this sort of stuff on a podcast, but I'm going to tell you anyway. I've scored the third most points in this league. My record is 2-6, about to be 2-7. My points against through the first 8 weeks, 79.52 higher than the next closest team. That's 10 points a week extra that people are scoring against me, and it's getting worse. Like, this week, I'm facing the top scorer again. I have the second most points myself. Second time that's happened this season. It's the fifth time I faced the highest scoring team in a given week. Otherwise, I'm fine. Totally
wow,
fine. Everything is fine.
Rough. This is fine.
Yes.
Wow. Any shot at making the playoffs?
I mean, I thought about that earlier today, and I had that realization. Was like, well, even if I win every game for the rest of the year, I'll be 6-7. I mean, I'll have the points to get in, most likely. My team's pretty good. Like I said, third most in the league. But just getting the W's week to week is going to be the grind. So, I don't know. It did give me that kind of wake-up call to kind of re-look at all of my leagues. And we talked a little bit about this last week with Dynasty formats. Is now's the time when you really have to kind of decide whether you're fully in or fully out on certain leagues. And I'm not advocating anybody to just give up and stop paying attention and stop setting their lineups, because that's rude. But I am at the point now where, like, certain leagues are going to start to get less attention, this probably being one of them, because I don't know if I have a shot anymore.
Right. And this is definitely that point in the year, like we've been talking about. But those are the kind of teams that early in the season I don't mind as much, because if I'm scoring points, just get me in the playoffs and I'll be happy. You can usually get over a few bad breaks, but yeah, when you're at 2-7, that's a hard hurdle to overcome no matter how good your team is.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to keep trying. We'll see how it goes. Like, I like the roster, but it's going to be an uphill climb, that's for sure. How about you? What's new?
Not a whole lot. Finally got a win in my own home league. It's amazing. Like, we refer to home leagues, even though you and I are both in so many leagues, but my home league has no money on it at all, but when it's in year 13 or 14, I'd have to go back and do the math, but it is the one I care most about, bar none, because there's just so much pride and so much trash talk, and so it's the one I always come back to. So any week I get a win there is a good one.
Any highlights from your victory? Any players stand out?
I had my entire bench was on bye or Spencer Ware, and still had the highest scoring week in the league. Woo! By a very large amount. Ben Roethlisberger, Marcus Mariota, Julio Jones. I have a pretty good roster. I'm in the mix for playoffs with by far the most points scored in the league. So it's a good team. I'm happy with it, but I just haven't, kind of like your situation. I was 4-4 coming into this week, so not a great record.
I'm surprised you have Roethlisberger on your roster. Did you trade for him? Because I remember you not being very high on him in draft season.
Yeah, I had a whole bunch of good running backs come through my team. Le'Veon Bell, Lamar Miller, Spencer Ware, Jay Ajayi. There's some more I'm forgetting. And so I've traded them away. I've added both Tom Brady and Ben Roethlisberger in the middle of the season.
Wow, very nice. I actually didn't get to watch many football games yesterday. I went to the Niners-New Orleans game at Levi's Stadium. So I missed a lot of it. How did Roethlisberger look? I wanted to ask you about that.
I saw a fair bit of that game, and it was pretty dreadful. That offense couldn't do anything for, I want to say, about three quarters. It wasn't like he was literally in single-digit fantasy points, looking bad, ineffective. The mobility wasn't real noticeably bad. It didn't seem like it was that as much as just an ineffective offense.
Okay.
I remember one good, it wasn't really a scramble as much as it was kind of like a Big Ben characteristic, kind of move around the pocket, extend the play sort of a thing. And so it seemed like he was moving okay. Maybe it was rust. Maybe it was just a bad week for the team. But it looked really bad until garbage time. And they made the game interesting, and he ended up with a good fantasy week. But it certainly wasn't fun to watch as a Roethlisberger owner for at least the first three quarters.
Well, the Ravens defense is pretty good, and I'm pretty sure they were coming off bye, so they had 2 weeks to prepare. And if Roethlisberger was at all limited, I mean, it all is a, you know, good recipe for success there for the defense. But yeah, I was more curious about physically how he looked. And if he looked fine, I think that's all I really care about. That's an interesting situation moving forward. I was surprised he played this week. I thought he'd sit one more out.
Yeah, it was – so I was flipping between that and one other game at the same time, but every time I was watching, it didn't appear that he was really clearly limited. He probably wasn't taking the same chances that he would have, but you weren't watching it saying this guy's got a bum leg.
Yeah, maybe he was just too doped up on painkillers or something.
Fair enough. You never know. But yeah, we're gonna get to talking about Colin Kaepernick because, like you said, you were at the game and I'm pretty interested. But what – on the other side of the ball, what's it like to watch Drew Brees in action?
Oh, man, he's so good. Like, he just picks defenses apart. He has no problem throwing to any receiver, which is probably the number one trait I look for in a good quarterback, is the guys who are willing to use, like, their fourth and fifth reads, you know, when he's throwing to Josh Hill for a first down, mm-hmm. things like that. It's very impressive to watch. I mean, albeit against a crappy Niners defense, but, yeah, his performance yesterday was pretty incredible. And Mark Ingram, man... Why does Hightower play any snaps at all? Like, just live with the fumbles and let Mark Ingram play, because that dude is legit, too.
Yeah, it makes no sense to me when they both have had some fumbles why you would pick him over Ingram. Ingram has been good almost every time he's had an opportunity in New Orleans.
Yeah, I have a feeling that maybe they're just trying to keep him fresh, because they do have an outside shot at the playoffs at this point, and I could see them just wanting to save Ingram for... you know, those winter games, particularly in the playoffs, if they can make it there. So I get the rationale behind it, but from a winning games perspective, I think that, like, every time they have Hightower in there over Ingram, they're probably doing themselves a disservice.
Hmm. Yeah, it's a fun offense to watch, even though they're not really that effective on some plays. Like, they have some really ugly plays, it doesn't look good. And then they just explode, and they kind of have that potential at any point in time, like the long Ingram run, or the Drew Brees can just do what he wants when he wants. Like, it's a really interesting offense.
There was some very deliberate, I don't know how you want to say it, like sets that they would throw out there. Like, at the game, you hear a lot more than you do when you're watching on TV, like eligible linemen as receivers. You know, they announce that to the crowd every time it happens, whereas in, you know, a TV broadcast, they don't always give you that information. It's kind of just implicit when they have those jumbo packages on the field. But they ran a lot of those yesterday, and I think that the deliberate nature of that, you know, to give those looks that are very clearly we're going to run it looks and then still pass out of them, just gives you that offense, that unpredictability that makes them really click. And it's a lot of fun to watch. I really enjoy watching the Saints.
And this was on the road. I mean, San Francisco is a very bad defense, so yeah. Not the best test, but it is kind of something you have said on the podcast before. Like, the home road splits are there, but Brees is still a good quarterback, even when he's on the road.
Yeah, I will say that was not quite an away game either. There were just as many Saints fans in the stadium as Niner fans. It was pretty embarrassing.
Oh, it's... Like, I don't know how I feel about Chip Kelly, because I don't think this is a very good indication, just that roster is not good. There's so many dysfunctional aspects to what San Francisco's got going on. It's hard to evaluate the coach, but that whole team is just a dumpster fire at this point.
He might just be like the new Mike Martz or Norv Turner, to where he's like really good. He could be a really great coordinator, but maybe not such a great head coach. I'm not sure about that, but, I mean, time will tell.
Right. So I want to kind of move on to a few other quarterbacks that came up and just ask you some questions and kind of see where you're at on a few players, because like we've said earlier in this podcast and what we said last week, it's kind of evaluation time. Be thinking about playoffs, thinking if you can make it, and if you can, what trades you should make to set yourself up. And so I know I have gotten a lot of trade questions. Our Twitter account @2QVs has gotten a lot. And one of the questions that comes to mind is what to do about Matt Ryan, because he's clearly vastly outperformed his draft capital. And so it's the question people seem to be raising is, do I trust this? Do I keep holding him? Or is it time to sell because he's going to collapse? And I don't think he's going to collapse. I think we've seen enough at this point to trust that he's a good quarterback. But what I want to do is ask, just if you had Matt Ryan, how many quarterbacks in the league would you accept in return? Like, just a straight quarterback for quarterback trade. You're giving up Matt Ryan. I assume Tom Brady is a clear yes, right?
Yeah, Brady for me, for sure. Breeze, I would still do that as well, mostly based on schedule. I think Rodgers and Luck are there. Maybe Big Ben, but probably not. I mean, the thing with Ryan is that he's continued to do this against some pretty good defenses, and in addition to the atrocious ones he's faced. Like, I don't put too much stock into what he did at Tampa Bay on Thursday night because it's Tampa Bay, right? But, you know, he beat up on Denver to some extent, beat up on the Seahawks, you know, 335 yards there. He's got some other tough matchups coming. His next four are actually pretty difficult. There's at Philly, then a bye, Arizona, Kansas City, and then at Los Angeles. All those defenses are pretty good. His final 2 weeks are fine. He gets San Francisco and Carolina in the playoffs, but I don't know. I think that that's the reason why you could consider maybe trading him for someone like Big Ben, if you believe Big Ben is going to be healthy enough to, you know, contribute at the level you would expect. I do think that Matt Ryan is in for a little bit of regression, but at this point, I don't really want to bet against him because he's been so good so far, you know?
Right, yeah, and the fantasy playoff schedule, like you mentioned, is really appealing. And if you play in Week 17, they play New Orleans then, just adding on to your point.
Yeah, why not?
Right, and I will say Los Angeles hasn't really terrified me as a defense, but those others that you mentioned, Philly, Arizona, Kansas City, and a bye, that's four really clearly rough weeks. And then L.A. after it, who's not – by no means am I calling them a good matchup. I just think it's probably the easiest of those four.
Oh, definitely. I agree with that.
And so it's kind of – you're going to have some down weeks, which may – depending on when your trade deadline is in your league, maybe you can get a worried owner selling. You get Philly this week, then a bye next week. Maybe in that Week 11 time frame, you can kind of trade when they see Arizona coming up. Just knowing that the playoff schedule looks so appealing. But I'm with you. There's not many quarterbacks that I can say for sure I would take instead of Ryan at this point, which is just insane given that he was going, what, QB 18, something like that? I don't have the ADP pulled up, but it's just a crazy year for him.
Yeah, and it's one of those times, like with Bortles or Kirk Cousins last year, I think that there are times when you just kind of need to ride the streak in fantasy. You need to throw away whatever preconceived notions you had about a player and stop thinking about them as a, you know, a sell high, and start thinking about what they're doing for you as just, you know, gravy, you know, just be like, okay, this is good. I'm going to keep seeing how this goes. And I think that Ryan's one of those guys this year. I mean, there's no evidence to suggest he's going to slow down.
So I want to ask you next about the rookie quarterbacks, and not Dak Prescott at this point, because I think we have talked about him and the Tony Romo situation a fair bit. I want to talk about the other ones. And so I'll start with Cody Kessler, who has now been named the starter for Thursday night. The Browns play the Ravens on a short week. And Hugh Jackson has said he doesn't want to have a QB carousel, which is humorous considering they've had, what, four quarterbacks plus Terrell Pryor. So Kessler appears to be the starter. I think there's a pretty fair chance he is the starter for the rest of the year, assuming health, just because what do they have to lose? I mean, McCown is clearly not the future. They might as well just keep Kessler out there, I think. Assuming he is the starter, do you have any interest in Kessler? Like, how are you valuing him, assuming he is kind of in that low tier but NFL starter category? Like, do you expect you would be playing him?
No. Outside of, you know, bye weeks or other true desperation situations like injuries to your primary guys, like, I do not want Kessler in my lineup if I can help it. Even in Superflex, there are probably some weeks where if I had, like, a very good running back or wide receiver option, I'd consider them over Kessler. I mean, not a whole lot. I tend to think that you should always have a QB in your Superflex, even if it's one of the lower-end guys. But with that said, I definitely don't want him at Baltimore on a short week. That sounds terrifying. Look at what Baltimore just did to Pittsburgh. The rest of the schedule isn't that much better. He still has a bye in Week 13. And on top of that, he has the Giants, Cincinnati, and Buffalo. You know, none of those are great matchups. None of them are terrible. But for a rookie quarterback, those are not the types of teams and defenses I want to go up against. That's for sure.
Yeah, no, it's a great point. And I think Cleveland has the potential to become interesting as soon as next year. They do have some really interesting pieces on offense, and Kessler himself could be interesting, but I'm with you. I don't really care about Kessler this year, especially given, like you said, that there aren't a lot of favorable matchups upcoming, and I don't think he's good enough to overcome tough ones.
I do like the fact that they are using him and that they're letting him get these NFL reps, because at the very least, if he shows improvement, that might prove to the Browns that they don't necessarily need to go out and target, you know, a big name quarterback in the draft, at least, you know, leaving them to maybe shore up some other issues like their defense in the first round of the draft. You know what I'm saying?
Right. I think that would be a really perfect scenario for them. Just that defense is so atrocious. And yeah, knowing if you can just keep Kessler in that mold of not a world beater, but enough that we'll get some wins with him, sort of a quarterback.
He's accurate enough.
Right. He's been fine this year. He hasn't been great, but the NFL has shown us plenty of times that you don't have to be great to lead an NFL team to wins. You just have to be, like you said, accurate, keep the ball in your team's hands, and don't make stupid mistakes.
Speaking of not being elite to win, can you give me a check-in on Tygoat Taylor and how he's doing in that game?
So we've got the Bills and Seahawks going on as we record. It's 7-7, and the Bills are now first and goal again with about 4 minutes left in the first quarter. It's been a shootout of sorts. Turns out the Bills' first touchdown was off a blocked punt setting them up,
nice.
And Tyrod ran it in. Now they're at the 9-yard line going on. And so not a game I would have thought would be a shootout, I'll say that. Seattle's defense at home.
I'm just going to assume that Tyrod was the one who blocked the punt, and then he ran it in on the same play.
I mean, do they have other players on the team?
Not that I'm aware
of. He's the only one. Yeah. He and LeSean McCoy, I guess. I'll take it back. They've got two players.
2-on-11. So, hold on. Speaking of rookie quarterbacks, can we talk a little bit more about Carson Wentz?
Yeah. What do you want to talk about?
Well, I don't know. It's just, he's so bad, isn't he? We've talked about it for a couple weeks now. I feel like I've been preaching this to the podcast listener choir, but he really does just look like a rookie after that good start. And, I mean, we all thought that maybe we had something more with him, but at this point, he's basically Cody Kessler, right?
Yeah, it's really disappointing because the first four games, 5 weeks of his season, he was really good. But yeah, it's been ugly. I don't think we can trust him. And notably for me, the criticism coming into this week had been that the team had kind of put the training wheels back on and said, don't throw it deep. This week they let him throw it, and it didn't matter. And that's concerning for me, that he's just kind of shaken where these last 4 weeks he's been bad. I mean, he has been single-digit fantasy point bad in several of these weeks. I'm not very interested in him at this point. He's QB 26 in points per game. If you throw in people that have played at all, like Josh McCown, Nick Foles are ahead of him. It's just not pretty, and I don't know that you can trust him at all.
Yeah, and I think that the growing pains are to be expected. What you talked about with, you know, throwing short versus throwing deep, they have to take the training wheels off. You know, they can't just restrict him like that. It's kind of the opposite of what I was talking about with Drew Brees earlier. The fact that he can go anywhere on any play is what makes him so dangerous. If you make it clear through your game film that your quarterback is not going to throw it more than, you know, 10 or 15 yards down the field, then that's something the defenses are going to key on. And even if he can't make those throws now, he does need to learn to try to make those throws. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. No, it was interesting. I was talking on Twitter before we were recording about that Eagles situation and just how bizarre it was that Sam Bradford was there. They paid money to bring Chase Daniel in, then they paid a lot to get Carson Wentz. And it's just been such a mess. I don't know what to make of it. I do think it's the right call, though, to have Wentz in. I think he is much more of an unknown than Chase Daniel is. Daniel played at a Big 12 school and has, at this point, 77 pass attempts in the NFL, but he at least has some film. I think it's the right call to put your rookie in and see what he's got. Let him just be out there getting the reps rather than going with a guy that's been in the league a while. It's ugly, but I don't think this is a team that anyone thought was going to compete in the playoffs anyway, so you might as well have those growing pains now.
Yeah, definitely.
So an interesting stat, at least to me, is looking at the last two drafts, the quarterbacks that went 1-2, this year being Jared Goff and Wentz. Goff obviously hasn't played yet, and Jeff Fisher just announced that he won't be playing yet again in Week 10, which, just side note, when the Rams are nearly dead last, or at least bottom four, in nearly every offensive category, why is Fisher sticking with his quarterback? I don't get it. But anyway, Goff hasn't played. Wentz is QB 26 in points per game. Last year through 9 weeks, Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota were QB 22 and QB 14 in points per game. And this year, they're obviously much better than that. 2-3 years from now, like if we're talking dynasty, do you think it'll stay this way where we look at one class as clearly better? Or do you still have some optimism that Wentz and Goff could have really interesting value long term?
I don't have a whole lot of optimism, but that's primarily based upon, you know, the scouting reports coming into the draft. You know, we knew that the 2016 draft was not going to be a great one for the quarterback position or any position for that matter, really, right? Not fantasy-wise. Whereas, you know, Winston and Mariota were both hyped pretty big time when they were coming out of school. I don't know. I have a feeling that both Wentz and Goff will get better. I mean, Goff can only get better, I suppose, because he has zero production to his name so far. Yeah, it's a good question, and I do think that with that in mind, it does make a potential interesting buying opportunity on Carson Wentz in Dynasty. I feel like we bring this up every other week, but is he a guy who you're considering trading for at all?
My main concern right now is that I think owners who drafted Wentz are probably valuing him pretty highly despite a few bad weeks because they're saying we saw potential, he's a clear starter, he'll shake this off, and so I don't know that the price is cheap enough. I don't know that we've seen enough of a dip after those first few games that it's really worth it. I am far from giving up and saying he's not going to be a good fantasy quarterback at any point, but I would worry if you're still paying pretty high prices to add him and kind of that the endowment effect of once you have something, you value it more than you would otherwise. I think that that's probably what a lot of Wentz owners are going through, and that I'm not willing to overpay to get him, but obviously if you can find an owner that's scared he's not legit, I'm fine to add him. We don't know enough at this point to say he's bad.
What about Goff? Where are you at on him?
I think Goff is a really interesting buy low at this point because there is nothing to suggest that he is better than when he was drafted. And so I would expect you can, in some leagues, find owners that are just really worried and thinking this guy's got to be terrible. And if you could find those scared owners, I am interested. I'm with you that I think the scouting reports that we saw coming into the draft, he probably doesn't have the same upside and potential as Winston and Mariota, and he's on a bad team for fantasy potential. But I do think he is a better buy-low opportunity than Wentz just because his owners can't have much of any enthusiasm, whereas Wentz's can.
Is his team really that bad, though, or is it just Jeff Fisher? Doesn't it seem to you that half of their problems are just mentality and play calling related?
It's a fair point. I mean, they do have some interesting players on that team, but it's kind of a collection, especially at wide receiver. It's a collection of guys that have never really amounted to anything. We're interested in them, but they haven't been great. I mean, Kenny Britt, Brian Quick, Tavon Austin, all these really interesting names that have never really shown a ton in the NFL. So I think it's probably somewhere in between, but yeah, I think Fisher is a huge limiting factor on that offense.
Yeah, what do you think the odds are that he does get fired? Didn't he just sign an extension? That's probably pretty far-fetched, huh?
Right, but I don't think it's a foregone conclusion. My understanding, and I am far from an expert in these sorts of things, is that the extension isn't the sort of thing that would prevent them from getting rid of him if they wanted to.
Right. It's such a high-profile situation. You know, new team in Los Angeles, this media capital right near, you know, NFL Network studios and all that. Like, I just can't imagine that if they continue to be bad/mediocre for year after year with Jeff Fisher, that he's got that much of a leash, despite, you know, the extension they gave him.
Right. It's just such a dreadful offense year in and year out, and they underperform. That defense should have been great, and they're underperforming too, but the offense in particular, they're literally one of the worst in almost every offensive category, just yards, yards per play, points. It's just disastrous. And when that doesn't change year to year, it's amazing. It's shocking to me that he still has a job.
Yeah, I'm very surprised as well. I don't know how somebody can get by like with such antiquated ways of thinking in the age where, you know, we have so much data and so much, I don't know, information in general that kind of shows what a good football team is like. And to see somebody run a team in a way that just flies contrary to all of that is so bizarre. Like, I get that maybe you want to zig when other people are zagging to some extent, but he just does it in all the wrong ways. It makes me crazy. I got a question for you. You mentioned Wentz earlier and kind of tied into the conversation about how the Eagles did have Bradford. Did you get a chance to watch Bradford play yesterday? And I'm curious how good he looked, because he had a nice matchup against Detroit.
No, I didn't watch it. The thing that stood out to me is that, yeah, it wasn't a great fantasy day, but when you look at his stat line, he was 31 of 40 for 273 yards. So really he was limited by the fact that he only had one touchdown. And granted, this is a terrible matchup. I'm not saying that this is an acceptable or a good performance in that matchup, but I don't think it's as bad as it might seem if you look at just the fantasy points scored. I especially think that Stephon Diggs, Kyle Rudolph, and bizarrely Cordarrelle Patterson provided. Yeah, he had 8 targets this week. Yep. There's enough weapons there that if the offensive line holds up, I do think Bradford's interesting. But until we see the line do something more, I'm definitely worried that Bradford probably isn't even a QB2 option most weeks.
I mean, he outscored some bigger names yesterday. He outscored Stafford. He outscored Cam Newton. I mean, he outscored Andrew Luck. He's outscoring Tyrod Taylor and Russell Wilson at the moment, but, you know, that's probably going to change. One of them will probably pass him. But he was the QB12 heading into Monday Night Football, so it's not like he had a bad game. But that QB12 was a huge drop-off from QB11. It was like a 3-point difference, whereas everyone else in the rankings is pretty bunched up, you know, from one guy to the next. So I could see what you're getting at. You know, Bradford is one of those guys who is just a mediocre, you know, Trevor Siemian, Joe Flacco, Alex Smith type, to where in the right matchup like this one, you could have used him in your 2QB league and gotten, you know, a fair performance, but not an elite one, but not a dreadful one either. You know, like, those are the types of guys who we have to assign value to every once in a while, typically based on matchup. I mean, that's what Sal and Jim get into on the QB2 experience all the time. But yeah, I mean, Bradford isn't a guy that I would look to go out and get or even use in DFS either, because I do think the ceiling is limited. But in a yearly league, if he's one of your guys, I think that you can use him if you have to in the right situations.
No, I think he might be usable. The concern for me is that, yes, this was a fine week, but it's against the worst defense, pass defense, bar none. And just when we look at what he's done this year, he's yet to throw for 300 yards, and it's pretty consistent that he's a one-touchdown guy. And so I don't know that there's a lot of upside. I think there's some more interesting QB2 candidates, but he is one of the safer, more boring options. I think that's a valid point. And he has a couple of decent matchups upcoming.
Yeah, it's good to know that he's probably not going to get benched either. Well, I mean, unlike right. somebody like Kessler or even Ryan Fitzpatrick, right? You know, these guys who have been underperforming, and while you might use them now while they have a job, if you're relying on that for maybe a bye week coverage in, you know, week 12 or something, if they get benched before then you might just be screwed.
Yeah, no, it's true. I mean, Sean Hill isn't a likely candidate to come back in.
Yeah. What else were you seeing in week 9?
I was pretty interested in the Tennessee-San Diego game. I watched a fair bit of that. I was particularly interested because of the two quarterbacks. They're both guys that I like and that are very interesting. Rivers, we've talked about a lot. Mariota is one I think we probably haven't given enough airtime to. He's had a fantastic stretch of 5 weeks where he's been really lighting it up for fantasy. He is right on the cusp of being a QB1, depending on your scoring for the season. And it was ugly. Just he had two turnovers. I think it was two turnovers for touchdowns, if I remember correctly, and looked rough. But he also ended up as a fantastic scorer and did great. And so I'm a little torn on what to think this year, but long term, it's fantastic. I think they have found their franchise quarterback. And so I guess I'm curious, do you see Mariota as a QB1 for the rest of season, or is he going to remain kind of on that high QB2 tier for you?
Yeah, it's a good question. For me, the distinction is a little more gray than that anyway. Like, I think that the guys who are low-end QB1s aren't that much different than the guys who are high QB2s. And I think that Mariota belongs in that discussion, you know, with, you know, Tyrod Taylor. Who else could we throw in there? Throw some names at me. Like, Jameis is in there for me. I'd say that even Stafford at this point is a guy who maybe I would kind of consider in that low QB1 tier. I don't know. I like him. I do think you have to consider Mariota's schedule when you look at what we've seen him do in recent weeks. We're talking about games against Miami, Cleveland, Indy, Jacksonville, and San Diego. But that's not going away in the next 3 weeks. He gets to play Green Bay, Indy, and Chicago before the bye. And so, yeah, ride it out. Let him carry you into the playoffs. I think he's definitely a QB1 for the regular season. Of course, in the playoffs, he'll have to face Denver and Kansas City and Jacksonville, which is a little brutal. Jacksonville is not a terrible matchup, and Kansas City isn't either, but it is in Arrowhead in Week 15, and that Denver game in Week 14 is one that you probably just can't use, I might imagine.
Yeah, and a bye in Week 13. I mean, bye Denver, Kansas City is definitely a really rough stretch for leading into the fantasy playoffs, and I realized, being the expert podcaster I am, I was on mute when you said to throw you out some names. So I was naming people. You just couldn't hear me.
Well, who did you name?
I think Dak Prescott is in that conversation.
Yep.
If we're looking at just points per game, Blake Bortles and Cam Newton are both below Marcus Mariota right now. And so they are right there at that borderline. Phillip Rivers is another name that you could argue is there. And I think Mariota is very competitive with all of them, as well as the ones you named, enough that you could say he is for sure a candidate to be a low QB1 despite these tough matchups.
Yeah, definitely. Now, on the other side of the ball, you mentioned Rivers kind of being in that discussion as well. Where do you have Rivers kind of slotted against those other similar types of quarterbacks? Like, do you have Rivers ranked ahead of Newton for the rest of the year?
No, I don't. I think that the most appealing thing about Phillip Rivers, well, I'd say there's two. What I was going to say is the schedule. It's fantastic that starting in Week 13, he plays Tampa Bay, Carolina, Oakland, and Cleveland.
Yes, please.
That's fantastic. And the volume is the other thing that's good for him. They keep throwing. The concern is just how many pieces can they lose on offense? It's remarkable.
It's been pretty bad. I hope that it's not too many more. He is one of the players I have in that aforementioned league where I'm 2-7 with the third most points. So I'm really going to need Phillip Rivers to kind of carry me down the stretch.
Yeah, I've got Phillip Rivers in the Scott Fishbowl, and I am really hoping that those matchups turn out the way I hope they will. But yeah, just watching the whole offense drop around him worries me. What are they going to look like come week 14, 15, 16? Like, is there going to be anybody left?
Yeah, probably not.
It's a walking hospital at this point. It really is kind of bizarre that I think they said the team has placed someone on IR after every single game this season.
That's crazy. That does not bode well.
Right, and it's just primarily on offense, too. They've lost a couple on defense, but when they lost arguably their top two receivers, they lost arguably their top running back, then Dexter McCluster, who is just kind of a role player. Like, they're losing so many pieces, and then both Travis Benjamin and Tyrell Williams have struggled with injuries just this last week.
Hunter Henry, too.
Right. No, that's true. And so it's just that's my concern with Rivers. I don't think I can say he is a low QB1 for me. I think he has to be in the high QB2 range despite the matchups, just because there are enough question marks about how that offense is going to hold up down the road.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're all close enough that you can kind of just consider them one tier and basically look at every week individually and say, okay, in this week I'd rather have player X, and in this week I'd rather have player Y. And then as you go through, like if you did that for every week from this point forward, you could kind of evaluate which guys you'd want to target. And that would depend on your own fantasy team standing, right? Like if you feel like you're locked to make the playoffs, and you don't own Phillip Rivers now, you might feel good about trading for him because of that schedule you mentioned. Whereas if you, you know, need to get, if you need to get, make that push to get into the playoffs, Mariota might be the type of guy you would target, right?
No, that's a valid point. And we talk about schedule a lot, so probably worth making explicit. Focusing on the schedule will really benefit you. Don't be so tied to what players have already done. Really look at, like, it's one of the reasons I like schedule-adjusted fantasy points, because it really shows you a little better picture of what to expect. But it's also why it's important to look at the upcoming schedule, just to see, is this going to keep up or is it going to fall off, particularly as you're planning for the playoffs. So I totally agree with your point.
Well, and you can take that at a macro level, like right now when you're evaluating certain types of players moving forward, like rest of season type of rankings, but you can also, you know, put the microscope on it too and look at a given week and say, oh, well, you know, the Denver defense is a very tough matchup for Derek Carr and the Raiders, but this week they're without Aqib Talib. And does that make the matchup any better for Derek Carr? Well, of course it does, you know, and then you can kind of raise him up in your evaluation a little bit for that given week. It's that sort of minor stuff. And it's tough to say, like, you need to be looking at all this stuff because it's a lot of work. It's a lot of time out of your day to do it. But every little bit of research can help you in fantasy football. You know, finding those small edges could be the difference between a win and a loss. And especially when it comes to something like DFS, where you really need to be on point with all those minor details before you select a player for a given week, because that's all you care about is that week, you know?
No, it's a very good point. Is there anything else from this week that you want to discuss before we jump into Colin Kaepernick, the quarterback you got to see all of this week?
No, let's talk about Cap, because, yeah, like I said, I was at the game, and so I didn't really get to watch much of anything else. I've based most of my analysis here on, you know, looking at box scores and whatnot. So, yeah, let's jump into Kaepernick.
Okay, so one of the parts, or I guess one of the features of the Spotlight quarterback section that we've kind of had in recent podcasts is one thing you and I each noticed from the game, and I'm particularly interested in yours because you were there, but also just watched the entire game end to end. What stood out to you watching Kaepernick lead that offense?
To me, it was the inaccuracy is still a very large issue for him. And I think it was made up for a lot in this week by the fact that that Saints defense is just terrible. You know, he was making short, easy throws for the most part, and then the players were just making the defense look as bad as they are after the fact. You know, like that big touchdown run for Vance McDonald, that big run for DeJuan Jackson. It wasn't a very pretty game from Kaepernick passing the ball. When he did connect, it was fine because, you know, those guys had room to run, but there were plenty of throws that just were not hitting the mark. And I'm not sure if that has to do with the fact that he throws from the run so much, or if he's just not that good, you know, and I'm pretty sure it's the latter. I don't think he's a terrible quarterback. Like, I think he's fine. I'd rather have him than say someone like Trevor Siemian rest of season, most likely, just based upon, or at least for fantasy, what he can do with his legs. But as a passer, he's still got a long way to go, and at this point, I don't know if he's ever going to get there, because I feel like he should have by now in his career. What was the thing that you noticed?
The thing that I noticed is that he had 398 passing yards, because I'm purely box score scouting this one.
After the catch, man. So much of that was after the catch.
Yeah, but still, I mean, 400 passing yards against the Saints. The Saints haven't been... They are not the 2015 Saints that were the league worst pass defense. They're not good, but they're not dreadful. They're kind of in the lower half, but not firmly. And so to throw for 400 yards for whatever reason and to just not have a huge rushing day, this wasn't a way that I expected Kaepernick to be a top 10 quarterback or top 12 quarterback in a weekly basis, to throw 400 yards and not really run that much, just because I didn't think he and that offense could combine for this sort of a performance regardless of what caused it. And so that really stood out to me and is making me kind of reevaluate what I think is possible. And you're right, it's matchup, but we'll talk about, there's some good matchups upcoming as well.
Yeah, I disagree with you a little bit on the Saints aren't very good angle. Aren't as bad as we think they are angle. I mean, they're still bottom four in DVOA, pass defense. Same on rush defense. They're just not a very good defense. I do agree that it was interesting that Cap didn't do it with his legs yesterday, and I think that was in part by the New Orleans defense design. I think that they were trying to limit him rushing the ball because they knew they could catch him making mistakes throwing the football, and smart defenses are going to take note of that as well, in addition to the bad ones like the Saints, right? When we see Arizona play San Francisco next week, their defenders are much better than those of the Saints, and if the Cardinals guys start to jump some of those bad throws, it could get real ugly real fast. I'm a little worried about him next week, but yeah, the schedule upcoming after that looks a lot better.
Yeah, and your point is a good one. Arizona's ugly. I'm not touching Kaepernick, like not even in streaming situations this week. As far as New Orleans, I will say that through 8 weeks, according to 4-for-4 Football's schedule-adjusted fantasy points allowed to quarterbacks, they were 17th, and so right in the middle of the league. And so they haven't been great, but I don't think they are as exploitable as in the past. Like I said, I think we're not that far apart. They're not good by any means. But just it's not Detroit. Like, Detroit is last year's New Orleans.
Yeah,
or this year's New Orleans, however you want to say it.
And I think with the Saints, what you're seeing is because they're both bad against the pass and the run, and because their offense is so good, what you're seeing are teams going after them with the run. Not only because it's just as good of a matchup as if you try to pass against them, but also because they want to shorten the game. They want to keep Drew Brees off the field. You know what I mean?
Right, and it's such a unique team. You're right. Just the way that they play does influence things. So, yes, I will still be playing quarterbacks against New Orleans. I don't want to make too big a debate out of it just because you're right. Like, they're not good. So
can I ask you a question here? This is getting back to my own personal teams. I have a different league, not the one we were talking about earlier, where I own Kaepernick, and I also have Eli Manning, who's probably a no-brainer next weekend against Cincinnati. But my only other option besides Kaepernick for my QB2 is Ryan Fitzpatrick. Where would you fall on those two for week 10? You got Fitzpatrick at home against Los Angeles and Kaepernick going on the road to face the Cardinals.
Oh, man, it's painful.
Tell me about it.
Oh, that's just – it's not right.
Should I
– I think that you probably – so – I will just say, behind the scenes, you and I have talked to this week about Fitzpatrick versus Tyrod Taylor.
Yep.
A similar sort of scenario, like Fitzpatrick's matchup is kind of whatever. I mean, you can make arguments good or bad, but it's just kind of there. Whereas the other option has a rough one. I think you – so this is contrary to what I told you this week. I thought I would go with Fitz. I think I'm just done with Fitz.
Ooh.
Like, he's just so bad. I think I throw Colin Kaepernick out there and say maybe he gets me 100 rushing yards. Maybe it's worth it.
I like that you're saying this because that was my reaction as well. I'm like, you know what? Screw it. Let's go get some Konami points.
Like, just is there anything left with Fitz? Like, do we even have hope he will have a 300-yard, 3-touchdown game anymore?
Yeah, I don't know. Losing Eric Decker was just a huge blow to that team. And I think that the natural regression that was due for Fitzpatrick also is a huge part of the problem. But it's going to be Bryce Petty time sooner or later. I mean, maybe that's the play. Maybe I just go add Bryce Petty on waivers for nothing.
Oh, that's an ugly choice to make.
Sorry, this has turned into the Ryan Fitzpatrick experience once again. So let's get back to Kaepernick.
Yeah, let's do it. I want to break down a few more things, but before we get too far into this, let's talk about top 20s and top 10s.
Okay.
So just this this season, he's been QB 14, QB 16, and then somewhere between QB 6 and 8, depending on how the Monday night game ends up. And I will say it's still a shootout. It's 14-14 with 10 minutes left in the second quarter.
Nice.
So he has been a QB 20 in – or better, in all three of his starts, and he has been a top 10 quarterback in one of them. So of the remaining games, what do you expect he will do in terms of top 20s?
Well, we've talked about his remaining schedule, and you have to look at this in two different ways. You have to, are we playing the game to where we expect him to start for the rest of the year, or do we expect to see Blaine Gabbert or Christian Ponder go under center for the Niners over Kaepernick at some point? And I don't think you can rule that out at this point in the season. he hasn't looked good enough to where I feel confident that he's going to hold that job. So if he were starting the whole rest of the year, I'd probably say that, you know, of his remaining, what is it, 8 games, that probably 6 of them would be top 20. But I'm going to hedge against that and say 5 based upon, you know, the potential to, you know, not hold the job.
Right. Yeah, to me, this week is the breaking point. And so this is a tough week to have to give this prediction. Because if he survives, meaning he's still the starter after Arizona, there's not a scary matchup until Seattle in week 17. Like, there's some good and bad, but nothing terrifying. And so it's hard for me to say that he's going to get benched. I was going to say that he will have 5 or 6 top 20 weeks. I was probably going to say 6. But there's a very real possibility he has 0 more. Like, it seems like it's kind of an all or nothing thing at this point. So I'm going to say 6, but I'm not confident about
it. Split the difference and call it 3. Yeah, I mean, even if he survives Arizona, New England in week 11, while that's a fine fantasy matchup, Bill Belichick and the Patriots are the type of team who can really just pick a bad player apart. And if they want to just take it to Colin Kaepernick, I bet they could probably figure out a way to do that. So, yeah, I even if he makes it through Arizona, I don't know if he makes it through New England as well. You're right. It's very binary. It's like 5 or 6 or 1 to 0, right? It's scary. Top 10, I'll say, you know, 3. I think that there are a lot of these matchups, you know, the Jets, Chicago, Atlanta, Miami, even New England, where he could run wild. He could, you know, just by game script alone have to pass for a lot of yards too. I think that he's a safe bet if he has the job the rest of the year. I think he's a fine streaming candidate.
Yeah, I was going to say just 1 top 10. I look at the schedule and say on the road at Atlanta, if he's still playing in week 15, that's probably a game he's doing a lot. I don't know that he has many weeks like this one. This was a 400-yard week. His last two in fine matchups, he had 187 and 143 passing yards, sub 50% completion percentage. I just don't know that he has that top 10 upside very often. I'm going to say 1, although I do think he has much better top 20 upside just because of the rushing.
Don't you think there's some room for improvement in his game, though? Not necessarily skill-wise, but just based on learning the offense a little bit more? Because he spent so much of this year riding the bench. You know, he didn't really get a whole lot of game reps or practice reps in the Chip Kelly scheme. Now that he's had, you know, 3 games and a bye week to kind of put that stuff together a little bit more, do you think there's room for him to get better?
Honestly, I'm at the point that I don't know that it's as much the offense. I think that he is just inaccurate and bad at reading defenses and a kind of one look and run sort of quarterback, or a one look and then a really bad pass on the second look. I think it much more has to do with him than it does the offense. Could he improve some? Yes, but I don't know that it's going to be significant this year.
Yeah, they do run a ton of zone read too, which is, you know, always just a recipe for quarterbacks getting hurt. That doesn't help. He took a couple shots in the game yesterday that were a little scary. There's also that fear of injury with him in addition to fear of getting benched. So, yeah, you're probably more on point with the 1 top 10 week versus my 3, but, you know, I got to let a little bit of homerism bleed into this podcast.
And he is really one of the big unknowns. We were talking about a few quarterbacks earlier, like Sam Bradford, who it has a fairly narrow window of what we can expect from him week to week. I feel like Colin Kaepernick is really you playing that kind of GPP role in your lineup, saying, I need kind of the Hail Mary lottery ticket, and so I'm going to throw him out there.
YOLO.
You're not saying, get me 14 points.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that's a great point.
With Kaepernick, I will just ask the larger question we've been kind of touching on. This quarterback situation, I personally will say I doubt they go back to Blaine Gabbert. I am less sure if they give Christian Ponder a shot. Do you have a sense of what is likely to happen?
No, not beyond just what I've seen. My hope from a fantasy angle is that they keep playing him and attempt to maybe boost up his value for a potential trade. I don't think that anyone would trade for him just based upon, you know, the situation that's kind of developed between him and the team. Speaking of which, like, just sidebar, the, like, support our troops angle that the NFL was promoting this week, at the game, it almost seemed like it was aimed at Kaepernick, as strange as that mm-hmm. was. It was just one of those weird kind of political situations, but I don't want to get into that on the podcast. I'm sorry I brought it up at all.
We're recording the day before the election. We want to talk about troops versus police.
Yeah.
Let's see what all we can drag
out. Never mind. Forget I brought it up. You don't have to edit it out or anything, but I'm going to zip it. But anyway, like, I think that it would be great if they maybe let him play to try to boost up his value. I don't know if that's going to work, like I said, but I think that that's fine. I think they know that Christian Ponder isn't the answer either. But, you know, at some point, if they keep losing, maybe they do just go into full-on tank mode and decide, yeah, well, let's throw Christian Ponder out there with no preparation and see what happens. Because the worst thing that happens is we continue to lose, right? And we keep going towards that second draft pick behind Cleveland. No, I don't have a great read on it. I don't really think that any of these quarterbacks is any good, though. So that just keeps it nebulous.
Yeah, no, it's fair. I don't know what they are going to be playing for. And like you said, Ponder is not going to be the answer. What's the point of – you're not really testing him to see how good he is at this point.
No, I don't see it. I hope they stick with Cap. He's the most exciting of the three, that's for sure.
Yeah, and just with his ability to run the zone read and to provide that mobile aspect. I mean, Gabbert did to some degree. I don't want to slight him too much. He had his own problems, but he was mobile. I think that mobility just means that Cap, if he can learn and improve, could be really interesting in the offense that Chip Kelly ideally would like to run.
Yeah, and that's ultimately the point I was trying to get at earlier when I was asking you about, well, it's been 3 weeks and a bye week now. Maybe he's better at you know, understanding this offense. And it's hard to say if he is because the defense they just faced was so poor. But at the game, watching him play, you could see that those actions were genuinely keeping the defense on their toes, right? They didn't know if he was going to hand it off. They didn't know if he was going to keep it himself. And a lot of the time he would keep it and then make a pass. It's like, if you have that sort of flexibility on an offense, that sort of unpredictability, then I think that good things can happen. The main issue with the 49ers is that their defense is so bad that eventually the zone read becomes kind of a moot point. You know, you can't just continue to run the ball and hope to win games if you're down by, you know, 10, 20 points. Eventually he's going to have to be able to pass from the pocket. And until we see that start to develop, which again, you and I both agree that that's probably not happening based upon what we know about Kaepernick to this point in his career. But until he can learn to do that, or if he can learn to do that, then he becomes truly dangerous. I think in general, he's only going to be good in, you know, middling matchups, or, you know, against defenses that generally have a hard time against the zone read.
Yeah, no, I would agree with all of that. I don't have a lot more to say about Cap. I think the thing I'll stick to is I can absolutely see throwing him in your starting lineup as long as he's a starter, but you've just got to be very comfortable with the role that he's playing, that you have a roster around him that is pretty locked into points. And you're looking for upside. You're not trusting a floor.
Yep, that's a great point. Or if you are trusting any sort of floor, it's like the 10 to 12 point floor, not the 13 to 15 point floor that you would want from that sort of quarterback.
Yeah, no, it's fair. And who knows any given week what it's going to look like. And when we're talking about a risk of benching, you also got to factor that in as well, because it could happen mid-game.
Yeah, definitely. Let's look at week 10.
Yeah, so speaking of bad quarterbacks, there's several interesting matchups. The first one being Texans against Jaguars. I don't see the Jaguars as any sort of intimidating matchup, but Brock Osweiler is just so bad. I don't know that I want to start him anywhere, anytime against any defense. I mean, if he couldn't make Detroit look like a good matchup, I don't know that I ever want to play him again. Are you with me that you're just done on him, he's cuttable, or are you still willing to roster him hoping kind of things turn around?
I'm absolutely with you on not starting him. I don't know if I'd cut him, but what you brought up about Detroit was great. I looked at his game log, and three of his four worst performances have been on the road. He gets the Jags on the road this week, P.S. The other worst performance that he had this year was against Detroit. So I don't even know how you can trust him at all. You know, it's like he had the perfect matchup at home, and he couldn't do anything with that. And if you're trying to throw him out there on the road against a better defense, like albeit not a much better defense in the Jags, but no, I don't want any part of Brock.
Yeah, so I live in Houston. I'm no Texans fan, but everyone around me is, it seems like. And it's this very bizarre, they hate Brock, they really hate the deal that the team signed him to, but they're also competing for the division and they're undefeated at home. And so, like, the criticism isn't that loud, even though no one likes him and they all think he's terrible, because the team itself is just in this weird position where they are competitive. I think at some point that comes crashing down, though, and when it does, I'm not sure he stays the starter over Tom Savage, which is kind of crazy given the contract he's on.
Yeah, it's actually kind of reminiscent of when the Niners were kind of good with Alex Smith. This has become the Homer episode that we've always dreamed of, Josh. This is great. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Nick Foles just faced the Jaguars and posted a little bit more than 11 fantasy points. And I don't know where the evidence is that shows Brock Osweiler is any better than Nick Foles. You know, if you can show it to me, that'd be great. I'll hang up and listen.
Yeah, and we saw Foles at least have a good season. We haven't seen Brock do anything.
Yeah, I'm off of Brock. What?
Well, moving.
I was going
to
say,
moving to Brock's old team. Now quarterbacked by Trevor Siemian, I have about the same question. He's got a good matchup playing at the Saints. Is he playable in matchups, or is he just kind of such a lost cause other than his one good week?
Yeah, I'm going to take the opposite view here and kind of embrace that look we gave Kaepernick this week is, you know, that defense is just so bad. It doesn't take difficult or complicated plays to expose them at all. The 49ers proved that on Sunday. You know, those short, easy passes can turn into big plays against the Saints pretty easily. And I think that Siemian can make those type of throws. I don't think that he's the type of guy who's going to necessarily crush you with the deep ball like Ben Roethlisberger or someone like that. But if he's just asked to manage the game and let the opposing defense fold on itself, I think that he can do that. And I think that it makes him startable.
Okay. Yeah, I am willing to be talked into it because he's okay, the defense is bad, and I do think that Emmanuel Sanders and Demaryius Thomas are such good options that there's interest. I have interest, but I'm really worried that he's just not very good.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you have to start him. I think that with Kaepernick, it was one of those things where he was definitely a top 10 option for me last week, but that was mostly based upon his rushing upside. Trevor Siemian doesn't have that at all. You know, he doesn't we haven't seen that stealing from him yet, except for that one big game he had. And that might be it. You know, that might be the last time he gets that many fantasy points ever again in his career, let alone this season. So, I mean, I it's harsh, but I'm sorry. That's the truth in my mind. I don't think that he has the same upside against the Saints that Kaepernick did. But, you know, as a top 15 option, I could see it.
Okay. I think I can get behind that to some degree. I'm still worried about it, but there's some reasons for optimism. Moving quickly, just another bad quarterback that I'm on record as really not liking. Jay Cutler, I've got to say I am interested. He's playing Chicago. He's playing Tampa Bay. Chicago is playing Tampa Bay. And he didn't look bad last week. I am willing to kind of throw him out there to say he's probably a streamer you should be looking at this week. And is that crazy? I mean, the offense isn't that good. It hasn't been that functional, and he's still not amazing. But this looks like it lines up to be a good play.
I agree with you. I think he's definitely stream-worthy this week. And I think you have to look at that beyond this week, too. His schedule down the stretch is very nice. At New York in Week 11 isn't great. But after that, he gets Tennessee, San Francisco, Detroit, Green Bay, and then Washington in Week 16. The fact that he dodges Minnesota in the fantasy playoffs because they play in week 17 is so nice, man. That makes his schedule so much easier. I like Cutler. I think that he's an interesting buy low for two QBs.
Yeah, I don't like him. Cutler. I'm so anti Cutler, but I hear your point.
Yeah.
Like this could be, if they can turn it around and really get the offense clicking, and certainly Cutler uses Alshon Jeffrey better than Brian Hoyer did. And Alshon Jeffrey being clearly your best receiving weapon, you want to do that. So I could see it. The dominoes do seem to be lining up that way, and it kind of scares me. I don't want to be rooting for Jay Cutler.
Yeah, I think that he has more appeal if interceptions don't hurt you as much, you know, in 0 point per interception or minus one versus minus two. But, yeah, I like the schedule. I think that he's a guy who you can use. I wouldn't be excited about it. And I think that maybe once bye weeks are over, he'll have less appeal just because we'll have all options at our disposal. But I think he's fine. I think most quarterbacks are fine, though. This has been my mantra all year.
It's a good one. I don't have many other fantasy notes for next week. I will say that the Sunday night game, I may just block off the schedule. Like, to watch Seattle and New England play, and especially since Seattle is looking like a good team again right now as we're recording, I think this could be a really, really interesting game. You've got kind of the narratives behind it because of the Super Bowl and whatnot, but it's also just two of the best teams in the league. And it's just, it is a pleasure when we get to see good teams play good teams, because there are so many bad teams in the league as well.
Yeah, especially the primetime matchups, which by and large have been not very good this year. It should be fun to watch that one. I'm looking forward to that one too. I got one last question for you before we wrap things up though, Josh. You ready?
Yeah, let's do it.
So one of the key storylines from yesterday was a squirrel getting onto a football field. I want to know what's the animal you would most like to see play football?
Huh. Interesting. So while I'm stalling to think about the answer, I tweeted asking which you'd rather have in Dynasty, that squirrel or Jeff Janis.
That's rough.
Janis dropped a clear, like, deep pass.
So
your question is interesting. The one that leaps to mind is a giraffe because of the height. How do you cover that? But I also don't know they catch with their mouth very
team
well.
Big just, wide receiver.
Is the tongue useful for catching? I don't know if it's like stick 'em. That's the one that comes up. I mean, the catching is the biggest problem. It's got to be some sort of ape, right? Just so that you have hands, you have the ability to do the things football players do. I don't know. How do you think through something like this?
You
got me stumped.
Yeah, the first one that came to mind for me doesn't really work because it's an aquatic animal, but I was thinking of like a big octopus or a squid, you know, with those suction cups, multiple arms. Yeah, that's
right.
Probably the direction I'd go, especially if you like giant squid, you know, if you could somehow, you know, let it get around on the field, like hook it up. Like, what's the opposite of a scuba mask, you know, where we need air to go underwater? You
like
strap on, yeah, like a fishbowl over the squid's head and let it come up onto land and, you know, wreak havoc on the football field. That's what I want to see.
I love it. This was unplanned, and I don't have an answer.
Ape is pretty good. I mean, do you have like a – are you an orangutan guy, a gorilla guy? Let's hash this out.
I mean, size matters. I think you got to go with one of the larger ones, some sort of gorilla. Large primates are going to be the closer you can get to human skill sets. I mean, we make a game for humans. You got to think the most human-like animals are going to do well.
Yeah, except for a squid. You're right.
Of course. But are we really that different?
It seems like as good a place as I need to wrap it up.
Ponder that while you
on
wait
that
for
one, dear
next
listeners.
Episode. So on that note, I will say, why don't you go review us? Tell us how you like that sign-off note. But we really do appreciate all your ratings, your reviews on iTunes, Stitcher, anywhere else that we'll accept reviews. You can try and put it on Yelp. I don't think that'll work.
Amazon Prime movie reviews.
There you go. We really do appreciate all the feedback, good and bad. Give us feedback. Let us know what works, what doesn't, what things are helpful, what's not. You can obviously find all of our work over and the work of many other great writers, which is really more important than what Greg and I are doing.
Definitely more important.
At 2QBs.com. Follow us on Twitter if you haven't. Tweet at us. We're at 2QBs. And then personally, we're at Lake2QBs and at Greg Sauce. We're all on there on Twitter quite a bit. Love answering questions and talking football. For longer form questions, hit us up with an email, 2qbs@gmail.com. For all of these, we're spelling it out, TWOQBS. By now, you probably know how to find us, but we really do enjoy the interaction. That's why we do this, I think it's fair to say, is to have that community and the talk with 2QBers, just to have a place to talk football. So we appreciate you guys, and with that, we are signing off. See you in Week 10.